Hello and welcome to the Verity Podcast for Friday, March 29th, 2024. We're the only podcast that keeps separating the fact from the narrative spin. I'm Adam Clark.
And I'm Melissa Topshire with today's headlines. Sam Bankman-Fried is sentenced to 25 years in prison.
Putin warns Ukraine on the use of NATO F-16s.
The UN picks Saudi Arabia to lead its Women's Rights Forum.
A report claims illegal guns from the U.S. are fueling gang violence in Haiti.
The Argentinian embassy shelters Venezuelan opposition leaders.
Former U.S. Senator Joe Lieberman passes away, aged 82.
Disney and a DeSantis-backed board reach a settlement.
The White House orders federal agencies to appoint chief AI officers.
Spanish prosecutors seek a jail term for Luis Rubiales over his Hermoso kiss.
And contraceptive injections are linked to brain tumors in women.
Sam Bankman-Fried is sentenced to 25 years in prison. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Sky News, CNN, the Associated Press, and CNBC. Sam Bankman-Fried, the disgraced chief executive officer of the now bankrupt crypto exchange FTX, Thursday was sentenced to 25 years in prison. He was also ordered to repay $11.02 billion to the victims of the FTX collapse. In November, Bankman-Fried was found guilty on 7 counts of fraud and conspiracy for his role in the collapse of FTX, which left customers, investors, and lenders billions short. Prosecutors had sought a 40 to 50 year sentence, while Bankman-Fried's lawyers suggested a sentence of no more than 6.5 years, because their client is a nonviolent first-time offender. During sentencing, U.S. District Judge Lewis A. Kaplan emphasized Bankman-Fried's repeated perjury during the trial and the risk he posed to commit further offenses before criticizing his apparent lack of remorse for his crimes. Kaplan recommended the Federal Bureau of Prisons send Bankman-Fried to a medium security prison near San Francisco because his notoriety, autism, and social awkwardness could make him vulnerable at a high security prison. Bankman-Fried expressed plans to appeal. 3 other people who pled guilty to criminal charges connected to FTX and Alameda Research are awaiting their own sentencing, including Caroline Ellison, Gary Wang, and Nishad Singh.
Melissa, thank you for the facts on our first story today. I'm going to start the spins with an establishment critical narrative, and it's provided by CNBC. Bankman-Fried is not the villain prosecutors and the media eagerly depict him as. He's a misunderstood genius who created a brilliant company from the ground up. He should be allowed to rectify his mistakes, which did not amount to an intentional criminal act, rather than being sent to prison for an obscenely long time.
Here's the pro-establishment narrative from Fox Business. Bankman-Fried should consider himself lucky his sentence isn't as long as the one he truly deserves. He intentionally and callously defrauded customers and investors of billions and continues to lie while showing no remorse. He'll now have a long time behind bars to reconsider his mistakes.
And the Metaculous Prediction community is going to get things started with their first nerd narrative on our story. They think that there's a 25% chance that cryptocurrency miners will be considered brokers by the IRS by 2025, and that's according to the Metaculous Prediction community.
I did not know Bankman-Fried had autism. That completely changes my view of the story. Now I have to look at everything again.
With a spectrum view?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe he's a little more misunderstood.
Let's write him a letter. We should write him a letter. Write him a letter and send him 20 bucks and say, hey, see if he can make me any money off of this.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-oh. I feel uncertain about that.
News out of Ukraine, where Putin has issued a warning on the use of NATO F-16s. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Big News Network, Reuters, Euroactive, Associated Press, and New York Times. Coming off the back of an election win that secured his 5th term in office, shortly followed by the worst terrorist attack on Russian soil in nearly 20 years, Russian President Vladimir Putin on Wednesday issued words of warning to Ukraine's NATO allies over the delivery of U.S.-made F-16 fighter jets to the war-torn country. In a speech to Russian pilots in the Tver region, Putin started off his remarks by stating that Russia has no designations on any NATO country. Quote, The idea that we will attack some other country, Poland, the Baltic states, and the Czechs are also being scared, is complete nonsense. Putin said, quote, "It's just drivel." However, turning to the issue of F-16s, which countries including Belgium, Denmark, and Norway are soon expected to deliver to Ukraine, Putin said they would not change the situation on the battlefield, quote, "and we will destroy the aircraft just as we destroy today's tanks, armored vehicles, and other equipment, including multiple rocket launchers," he added. Putin further stated, "of course, if they will be used from airfields in third countries, they become for us legitimate targets wherever they might be." In the hope of counterbalancing Russia's air superiority in the war, Ukraine has sought after F-16 fighter jets from the onset of the conflict in 2022. However, it was thought such a move could lead to an escalation with Russia and was ruled out by the Biden administration until the policy shifted in August of last year, allowing European allies to begin the process of delivering the U.S.-made aircraft to Ukraine. Ukraine was initially told it would receive 45 fighter jets by this spring. However, according to a New York Times report earlier this month, it will only receive 6 F-16s in the promised time frame. The Times further reported that only a dozen Ukrainian pilots will be ready to fly F-16s in combat missions by this summer.
Thank you, Adam, for those facts. Here's the pro-establishment narrative from the Daily Mail. Putin starts his speech by claiming that he has no bad intentions against Western countries. Immediately contradicting himself, he then recklessly threatens those countries with attack, saying he would destroy NATO's F-16 aircraft even if they were outside Ukraine.
The pro-Russia narrative is provided by TASS. Russia has been consistent throughout the conflict that if F-16 fighter jets are delivered to Ukraine, they will have to be targeted and destroyed, as is the case with all other foreign-provided weaponry. Russia has also been consistent that if F-16s stage attacks from third countries, the bases in those countries would become legitimate military targets too.
And here's a nerd narrative from Metaculus saying there's an 8% chance that there will be a direct conflict between Russia and any NATO member state before 2027. Saudi Arabia will lead the UN Women's Rights Forum in 2025. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Saudi Arabia's X account, UN Women Headquarters, DW, the UN Web TV, and Freedom House. The United Nations Commission on the Status of Women, or CSW, has unanimously elected the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia to chair the organization's 69th session in 2025. The CSW is a functional commission of the UN's Economic and Social Council, or ECOSOC, established in 1946. UN women describe the body as dedicated to the promotion of gender equality and the empowerment of women. The Commission's Asia group unanimously approved Saudi Arabia's bid, and the UN's other four regional groups adhered to precedent by not contesting this election. However, Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International criticized the decision. Following the appointment, Saudi Arabia's ambassador to the UN, Abdulaziz Al-Wasil, stated that he was both honored to now chair the committee and that Saudi Arabia was committed to both female empowerment and gender equality. This comes as the nonprofit organization Freedom House's 2024 report on Saudi Arabia claims that women are, quote, subject to extensive legal and societal discrimination, while also acknowledging that educational and economic rights had improved significantly in recent years.
Thanks, Melissa. The spin's going to begin with a narrative A, and it's provided by Guardian. The product of an international lobbying and public relations scheme, Saudi Arabia's appointment as chair of the CSW is both comically ironic and deeply concerning. Saudi Arabia has no right to hold any influence over such an important international body. It's a travesty that a country with such a poor domestic record has walked uncontested into leadership over the UN strategy concerning gender equality.
And here's narrative B from the Saudi press agency. Saudi Arabia's first ever appointment as chair of the world's leading committee on women's rights is a testament to the country's impressive progress towards equality. Saudi Arabia will continue to champion equality and empowerment for women, encouraging greater participation at all levels of society. Riyadh will lead this important posting with due diligence and conscientiousness.
And the nerds think that there's a 50% chance that Mohammed bin Salman will become the king of Saudi Arabia by November of 2026. And that's according to the Miraculous Prediction Community.
Man, Saudi's just on top of it right now. They're like, you want your golf tournament? Right here. You want your women's right tournament? Right here. You want your space, right, launch your space vehicle? Right here.
They probably greased a few wheels.
Pretty sure they're all about the grease.
Yeah. Illegal U.S. guns have been fueling Haiti gang violence. Here are the facts as agreed upon by BBC News, Al Jazeera, Guardian, The Telegraph, and PBS NewsHour. Illegal weapons from abroad are fueling the surge in gun violence in Haiti, with an estimated 80% of the capital, Port-au-Prince, now controlled by criminal armed gangs, according to a recent UN report. Haitian human rights groups have pointed out that the nation itself has, quote, no weapons or ammunition factory. Small arms, semi-automatic, and even military firearms are reportedly entering the country due to weak state institutions and corruption. Experts say the weapons largely originate from U.S. states with lax gun laws and are often smuggled from Florida. In 2020, only 38,000 of the estimated 500,000 small arms in Haiti were legal, according to the Haitian Disarmament Commission. The weapons, including belt-fed machine guns, armor-piercing sniper rifles, and AK-47s, are reportedly concealed in clothing and food packages and brought into the country on small boats used by migrants sending aid to their families. Officials at the U.S. Department of Homeland Security argued that it's difficult to curb arms smuggling into Haiti without unnecessarily slowing down commerce and the flow of humanitarian aid to the impoverished island nation. The UN also noted that many airstrips built in Haiti for aid deliveries following the 2010 earthquake are poorly monitored and used for arms smuggling. In 2022, Haiti seized dozens of weapons with 15,000 rounds of ammunition shipped from Florida.
The Washington Post brings us a narrative A. Haiti's criminal gangs and narcos thrive on illicit arms, often originating from Florida due to lax laws. Despite some busts, trafficking persists, destabilizing not only Haiti, but also other nations. It would be unforgivable to ignore the proliferation of U.S.-made firearms, which are enabling adversaries to arm themselves.
Radio Jamaica News Online is going to continue the spin with a narrative B. Nations like Haiti, with a history of violence and chronic lawlessness, must look inward before blaming their ills on others. Assigning blame to the U.S. for gun smuggling is easy, but what about Haiti's own systems and checks? The U.S. has poured in millions of dollars in aid for Haitians. The nation must fix its own problems.
And here's another nerd narrative from Metaculus saying there's a 50% chance Haiti will not become an upper-middle-income country by January 1st, 2050. Argentina shelters Venezuelan opposition leaders in its embassy. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Al Jazeera, Buenos Aires Times, CNN, Reuters, BBC News, and Telesur. The office of Argentina's President Javier Milei confirmed at a press conference in Buenos Aires on Wednesday that Venezuelan opposition leaders took refuge in the Argentine embassy in Caracas. Buenos Aires further warned Caracas against any deliberate action that could jeopardize the safety of its diplomatic personnel and the Venezuelan citizens under its protection. The facility reportedly had its power turned off on Monday after opposition figures were welcomed to a meeting focused on alleged acts of harassment and persecution against them. While the individuals reportedly weren't named on security grounds, local media claims there were six politicians linked to Venezuela's main opposition leader, Maria Corina Machado, and has been barred from holding office. On Wednesday, Machado's Unitary Platform, or PUD, announced that Edmundo González had been enlisted as its provisional candidate to challenge Nicolás Maduro, as Corina Yoris was reportedly blocked from registering for the vote. Running for re-election on July 28, Maduro denounced foreign interference in the country's internal affairs on Tuesday, claiming that terrorists allegedly linked to the opposition have planned to kill him.
Thanks for the facts, Melissa. Venezuela Analysis is going to begin the spins with the establishment critical narrative. By sheltering opposition figures in its embassy, the far-right populist Javier Milei has sided with the U.S. in its quest to interfere in the Venezuelan elections. After Washington's puppet Juan Guaido failed, it's now Machado who is tasked with bringing about neoliberal regime change. It's not Maduro who is undermining democracy in Venezuela, but Washington's policy of meddling in sanctions, which is not aimed at the well-being of the Venezuelan people.
Here's the pro-establishment narrative from Breitbart. Argentina's decision to grant protection to opposition leaders was justified and in line with international law. Emboldened by the easing of U.S. sanctions, the Maduro regime launched a fresh campaign of arrests and harassment against opposition activists while driving his country to economic ruin. The socialist dictator wants only hand-picked rivals to run in the sham elections, and the free world must remain on the side of the Venezuelan people and democracy.
Well, Melissa, the nerds think that there's a 65% chance that the U.S. will sanction Venezuelan oil again by 2030. And that's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community. Former U.S. Senator Joe Lieberman passes away at the age of 82. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Associated Press, CT Insider, Politico, and Fox News. Former U.S. Senator Joe Lieberman of Connecticut, who was Al Gore's running mate on the Democratic ticket in the 2000 presidential election, died on Wednesday in New York City from complications from a fall at age 82. Prior to his win over Republican Lowell B. Wicker for his U.S. Senate seat in 1988, Lieberman served as state Senate Majority Leader and Connecticut Attorney General. He stepped down from the Senate in 2013. Lieberman was the first Jewish American to be nominated on a major party's presidential ticket. He and Gore came up short after a prolonged legal battle over Florida's 25 electoral votes was won by former Texas Governor George W. Bush and Dick Cheney. Lieberman won his last Senate re-election bid in 2006 as an independent after he lost the Democratic primary. More recently, he was a founding chairperson of the group No Labels, which has tried to cross the divide of partisan politics and is attempting to put centrist candidates on the 2024 presidential ballot. Throughout his career, Lieberman leaned left on some issues, including on the environment. But he was known as a hawk on matters of foreign affairs, including his support for the Iraq War.
Thank you, Adam, for those facts. We'll start this round of spins with the left narrative from the Huffington Post. Lieberman leaves behind a long and accomplished but mixed legacy. Early career accomplishments as a champion of progressive causes were completely wiped away by his late-life lurch to the right. He was steadfast in his support of the disastrous invasion and occupation of Iraq, and he nearly killed the Affordable Care Act. While he continued to caucus with Democrats as an independent, he too often aligned himself with Republicans on key issues to be remembered as any type of hero to the left.
Breitbart's going to counter that with the right narrative. Lieberman was a New Deal Democrat who was concerned with liberal social policies and civil rights, but he was willing to take unpopular stands in his party. Despite Democrats' intolerance of his support for the Iraq War, he held firm to his beliefs, knowing how crucial it was for the U.S. to fight terrorism abroad. He endorsed Republican John McCain in the 2008 presidential race and even had nice things to say about former President Donald Trump, proving there can be a middle ground in U.S. politics. He has an important political legacy.
Disney and a DeSantis-backed board reach a settlement. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Fox News, CNBC, Forbes, the Associated Press, the New York Post, and USA Today. Disney on Wednesday reached a settlement with members of the Governor Ron DeSantis-backed Central Florida Tourism Oversight District, or CFTOD, an autonomous governing zone for Walt Disney World in Orlando. Board members approved the settlement, ending a nearly two-year court battle. Under this settlement, the CFTOD's ruling that previous agreements between Disney and the old Reedy Creek Improvement District are null and void stands. Disney may also end its pursuit of a federal free speech civil complaint against DeSantis. Reedy Creek was governed by Disney for five decades, and DeSantis took over the board and filled it with his allies in February 2023, after Disney refused to comply with state law. Before DeSantis's takeover, the prior Disney-backed board agreed to undercut DeSantis. The DeSantis appointees sued Disney in a state court to have the 11th-hour deals voided, and Disney countersued. Both sides claimed victory, with DeSantis saying his fight over a $17 billion planned development near Disney was vindicated. Meanwhile, Disney highlighted DeSantis's agreement to appoint pro-Disney members to the CFTOD board. Development plans, which date back to 2020, are back on, and the new board will negotiate any changes to the agreement.
Thank you, Melissa. The spin's going to begin with a right narrative provided by Washington Examiner. DeSantis has secured a major win over Disney, vindicating his fight against the rogue woke corporation. Disney thought it could disregard Florida legislation and create its own rules in opposition to state laws, but DeSantis stepped in and stopped it from expanding its private empire.
And here's the left narrative from Deadline. DeSantis and his cronies may be taking a victory lap, but there are still legal battles to be fought. The governor could still be held accountable for violating Disney's First Amendment rights. Disney is ready to coexist with DeSantis administration if he upholds his end of the settlement.
Well, Melissa, the nerds think that there's only a 2% chance that DeSantis will become U.S. president by 2029.
And that's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community.
That was silly.
White House orders federal agencies to appoint chief AI officers. Here are the facts as agreed upon by CBS, Semaphore, Quartz, and PBS NewsHour. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris announced on Thursday that the White House Office of Management and Budget, or the OMB, has ordered all federal agencies to appoint chief artificial intelligence officers. In a statement, the OMB noted the risks as well as tremendous opportunities of AI, including for public services, addressing climate change, improving public health, and advancing equitable economic opportunity. Agencies will also have until December to implement measures to monitor their respective use of AI for impacts on the public, reduce algorithmic discrimination, and boost transparency. As part of its AI agenda, the White House wants each agency to establish AI governance boards to coordinate their use of technologies. These have already been set up at the Departments of State, Defense, Housing, Veterans Affairs, and Housing. The use of AI by the federal government is already underway, including for weather analysis by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and to judge patent applicants at the Patent and Trademark Office. Vice President Harris further emphasized the administration's desire for the appropriate use of AI, stating that, for example, the Veterans Administration doctors must ensure that AI-generated diagnoses aren't racially based.
Thank you, Adam, for those facts, and we'll start the spins with a Democratic narrative from Brookings. In his attempt to keep up with more ambitious regulatory goals in Europe, President Biden has set the stage for the government to codify concrete laws. While the president's AI Bill of Rights and subsequent memos regarding transparency, safety, privacy, and human rights are a good start, Congress is the body that must pass legislation.
We can't have a Democratic narrative without a Republican one. The post-millennial is going to provide one for us. Biden's AI agenda is likely being stalled because, as per usual, it's chock full of woke diversity and equity language. The White House doesn't care about protecting Americans from AI, but rather uses AI to correct so-called historical wrongs and make sure conservatives' ideas are suppressed.
And there's a nerd narrative from Metaculous saying there's a 50% chance that after a weak artificial general intelligence is created, it will take at least 28.7 months for the first super intelligent AI to be created. Where's 28 months coming from?
28.7.
28. Okay. Yeah, a couple extra days.
Well, at least we know artificial general intelligence is created. We can start checking off on the calendar.
Do you think the other 50% was like, oh no, we think it's 37.1 months?
Yeah, no, I think the other ones thought it was less, actually. I think they were
okay.
But then,
or do you think there's like five other two?
It must be breaking out into fist fights in the Metaculous office.
Totally. Can't keep them apart.
Or nerd fight, the slap fights, then maybe actually.
I don't know. How do nerds fight?
Slide ruler sword fights.
Now news from Spain, where prosecutors seek a 2.5-year sentence for Rubiales. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Al Jazeera, Guardian, The Athletic, and The Daily Mail. It was reported Wednesday that Spanish prosecutors are seeking a 2.5-year prison sentence for former national soccer chief Luis Rubiales for allegedly forcibly kissing player Jenny Hermoso during the Women's World Cup celebration. Rubiales, in August, was caught on video grabbing Hermoso and kissing her on the lips. The requested sentencing consists of 1 year for alleged sexual assault and another 1.5 years for allegedly trying to break the will of Hermoso to force her to say the kiss was consensual. Prosecutor Marta Durantes has accused former coach Jorge Vilda, sporting director of the Royal Spanish Football Federation, Albert Luque, and Federation marketing director Ruben Rivera of also attempting to coerce Hermoso. While the defendants have denied wrongdoing, recently revealed text messages between Luque and a friend of Hermoso show him saying he wanted Hermoso to die alone. Besides jail time, prosecutors also want Rubiales to pay Hermoso 50,000 euros, with Hermoso also asking for a 7.5-year restraining order against her former boss.
Thank you, Melissa, for that shocking story. The spin's going to begin with a left narrative provided by Deadspin. Rubiales was caught red-handed sexually assaulting Hermoso, and he should be brought to justice. The Spanish government, with a high proportion of female legislators, is setting an example for how these cases should be handled.
And here's a right narrative from the European Conservative. The appropriate punishment in this case isn't the issue. The true problem is the Spanish government's recently passed laws, ironically passed in the name of equality, that have released sex offenders from prison. The Spanish people should ask if their government is applying the law equally.
Our final story today is a report from a recent study that birth control injection has been linked to brain tumors. Here are the facts as agreed upon by The Telegraph, Independent, and Guardian. According to a French study published in the British Medical Journal, certain progesterone birth control injections were linked to a 560% increase in brain tumors. The tumors, called intracranial meningioma, are usually non-cancerous but can cause other issues, including vision, hearing, smell, and memory loss, as well as seizures and weakness, since they're located around the brain and spinal cord. Out of 108,000 women studied across France, 18,061 of them, with an average age of 58, underwent brain tumor surgery from 2009 to 2018. Two oral pills, medrogestone and promegistone, were linked to 4.1 and 2.7 times increased risk, respectively. The injections, sold by Pfizer under the name Depo-Provera, will receive updated labeling, according to the company. Several high-dosed progestogens were already known to raise the risk of meningioma. For this study, researchers looked at 8 more common forms of the hormone that were previously believed to be safe. For the 74 million women globally who used the drug for birth control, those most at risk took it for more than a year. The study also only showed correlation rather than causation, with researchers emphasizing it doesn't mean all progesterone treatments are bad.
Those were the facts, and here are the spins on our final story with the narrative A from the BMJ. The data in this study is important, and women should use it as part of their decision-making process. But until scientists delve deeper into the causation, it appears the risks associated with progesterone are low. More research is needed before any definitive conclusions are drawn.
The ZRT laboratory is going to continue the spin with the narrative B. Unfortunately, hormone-based contraception, particularly the pill, was once lauded, but it's turning out to cause more harm than predicted. The world must know how these synthetic hormone disruptors cause physical ailments like blood clots and mental issues like depression.
And the nerds have the final say here, with the Metaculous Prediction community saying there's a 50% chance that the global fertility rate in 2050 will be at least 1.8. I say you can't trust modern medicine. What I do when I don't want to menstruate is I just tell it, "Don't you menstruate! Don't you do it!" Works every
time. Is that blood? I don't know. No.
You stop. You stop that.
You suck that back up. Suck that back up.
Nope. You go back in there.
That is some self-control, Melissa, I must say. I'm quite impressed.
Works every time. Thank you for joining us for the Verity Podcast for Friday, March 29th, 2024.
Each day we use machine learning to read about 5,000 articles from about 100 newspapers and figure out which ones are about the same stories. For each major story, our editorial team then extracts both the key facts that all the articles agree on and the key narratives where the articles differ.
To find out more about Verity, visit our website, verity.news, or download our apps on the Apple App Store or Google Play. For Adam Clark, I'm Melissa Topshire, inviting you to join us next time on Verity.